So a couple of weeks ago, I was chatting with the training lieutenant over at the Richmond Police Department's training academy, and he mentioned to me that Acting Sergeant Richard McTernan was looking at retiring. He's got 20 years in and thinking, well, maybe it's time for the next chapter. And as I was chatting with Lieutenant McQuail, we both said almost at the same time, my gosh, it's going to be just about a half century then, if Richard leaves, when Richard leaves, that there will not be a McTernan in the Richmond Police Department. And we both thought, man, that is something worth talking about. So I'm very happy to say that Richard McTernan is joining us. We're going to chat a little bit about that. Sonny, thank you for being here, man.
Thank you for having me.
Let's talk a little bit about it, because you got 20 years that you've got in with the Richmond Police Department now. We'll talk about that, but it's this fact that it's almost a half century then. When you walk out those doors and you turn that badge in, man, it's going to be the first time in just about a half century that there is not a McTernan at the Richmond Police Department. So question number one, will RPD be able to survive without a McTernan on the payroll?
Absolutely, 100%. I have all the faith and confidence of the men and women who wear our shield in the city of Richmond.
All right.
They're in good hands.
Well, now that we've gotten that out of the way, let's talk a little bit about this time of service. I want to talk about, first, your mom, if you don't mind. As you know, I mean, I loved your folks.
Yeah, she loved you.
I loved your mom. Your mom told me so many wonderful stories about her desire to serve and having to drink milkshakes to make the minimum weight and stand on her tippy toes to make the minimum height, whether it was for the Marines or RPD, but she did it. And I'm curious, here you are 20 years into your career. You look back on what she did. What are your thoughts about Jan?
I can remember when, you know, I was very little when she started. I was 3 years old. This is 1983. You know, when you're that young, you don't really know what your parents do, period.
Right.
So as I was getting into elementary school, she would come home in the uniform and I'm putting it all together. And I didn't know how dangerous the job was. And then you get older. So now I'm maybe 10 or 11. And you're kind of figuring out as best you can as a 10 or 11 year old how the world kind of works. And learning about where my mom was working at the time in the city of Richmond in the patrol capacity. That's probably when I started to like legitimately have like that worrisome feeling for your parent.
Sure.
I realized what she was doing and what was going on in the streets during that time here in the 80s and early 90s. But she never talked about it. Like, she never came in and talked about work. She would field questions if you had, you know, the silly questions that young boys and teenagers have about police work.
Yeah.
But she left it there. And for the most part, she got into the detective side fairly early in her career. So I never really saw her in uniform. For most of her career, she was always in plain clothes, or detective or narcotics and regular people clothes. So that kind of helped put us at ease, not knowing that what she was still doing was very dangerous.
Yeah.
Like, so she's not in a patrol uniform. She must be safe, right?
Because that's
not
right.
A uniform safe, right? Not realizing the dangers of all the different facets of law enforcement. But yeah, she pretty much left it at work, didn't bring it home with her. It wasn't really until I was coming out of the military at the time and trying to figure out what was I going to do as a young adult. Was I going to do law enforcement? Was I going to go back to college? I really didn't have any idea. And that's probably when my mother and I had like our first adult conversations about the job. So this is around 2004-ish. Then I came home from Iraq and I said, okay, I think that's what I want to do. I think I want to stay in service. You know, I was looking to get out of the Marine Corps because my wife and I were going to get married and we wanted to have kids and we wanted to kind of settle down where her family and my family are here at the time in Chesterfield.
Right.
So I was like, okay, that seems like a logical step. So she fielded all the questions I had about, you know, what the job looks like, you know, because we never really talked about growing up. I didn't know, like, academy, patrol, and then you have to go through the arduous process of, you know, making a name for yourself to get into specialized units. And it was all brand new to me, even though I had a mother who had been doing it for decades.
It's interesting. You're telling me that she didn't really talk about it when she came home. She was just mom.
Yes.
Right. I mean, that was it. She's got three boys.
Yes.
She's got a husband, everything that everybody else has, left that at work. In retrospect, you think that was a good thing?
I do. And what's funny is, like, I didn't know what a big deal my mom was in, at the department until I became a recruit. And then everybody, like, officers started. Anybody that's a part of our training that come and do the yelling and PTing of us, they're, like, saying I'm going to embarrass my mother. Like, don't you do that. Like, and I'm like, I guess they would all know her. And but it wasn't until I got on the street and I saw the respect the department had for my mother, whether that was the patrolman, sergeant, all the way up to the chief. Like, when they would make contact, how respectful they were when they spoke about my mother and, you know, the job that she was doing at the time.
Yeah.
And we got to work together for a little bit. We overlapped. Not, we didn't ride together or anything, but we would work together during the same time and meet for lunch when I was working patrol in Southside. Probably one of the funniest things that happened was my partner Jason Holt and I were in patrol. We see a guy that's wanted to get out, foot chase. We're calling it over the radio. It maybe goes like a minute or two, the foot chase. Get him, apprehend him, no big deal. No one's hurt. And when you're in a foot pursuit, the only people that have the air, the people chasing them on foot, right? Everybody's quiet. Nobody's chiming in.
Right.
So we get him in custody, clear the air. And my mom was the XO at 3rd Precinct at the time. She comes over, her unit number, I think it was 302. She says, 302, 10-5, Officer McTernan. And I know it's my mom. I'm like, go ahead, Lieutenant. And she says, great job, son. I'm so proud of you. You're such a good little police officer. Everybody around us was dying laughing because people were showing up. So there's like 10 cops standing around. Everybody's just dying.
Oh,
and she's, all right, sweetie, going back to my channel. And they're just dying again. I was red in the face in front of my suspect. It was great.
I love that. It's, your mom's legacy, and we're talking about Jan McTernan, Lieutenant Jan McTernan, when she was at the Richmond Police Department. The legacy that she has established is incredible. You obviously have heard about it your entire career. Others who have interacted with other members of the Richmond Police Department, and quite frankly, Richard, law enforcement in Central Virginia. If you mention Jan McTernan, their face lights up. They know exactly who you're talking about. And if you are of a certain age, guaranteed you have a Jan McTernan story.
Sure.
You've interacted with her. And they have all been, this is the part that blows me away, they are all positive. They had such a tremendous appreciation for what your mom did inside of RPD. I mean, even in terms of investigations, you're talking about being a detective, major crimes and homicide. She was a really solid detective.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Did she talk about any of the cases there, or was it again just, hey, that's the job and now I'm home?
No, that was kind of it.
Yeah.
She was mom when she was home. She wasn't detective, sergeant, or lieutenant, whatever her title was at the time when we were growing up. She just kind of left it there.
Yeah.
And, I think it was a good thing. So I think if she told me everything that happened at work or answered every single question I had about her day, I probably would have worried about her all more than I did before. And I think she didn't want that. She wanted me to concentrate on what we were doing. My brothers and I at the time in life. And I go to work. That's what I do. That's what I'm paid to do. I come home. Right. Because everybody, when somebody finds out you're a cop, they have a million stories. Right?
Yeah.
So my dad and I, my mom were out and they're meeting people for the first time. They always ask what you do. My mom would say, you know, I'm a Richmond police officer. My dad would say, I'm a jet mechanic. They didn't care anything about jet mechanics. They wanted to know everything about police work.
Of course.
Right? So it's
of course.
That dynamic was always kind of funny to me.
Oh my gosh. Well, that is funny. So it's this legacy of service that your mom establishes. And you talked about your time in the Marines, just like your mom, just like your dad, just one of your brothers, United States Marine. What was involved in that? And you said you wound up in Iraq.
I did.
Yeah.
We deployed my unit in early of 2005, came home mid 2006, spent the majority of our time working out of Camp Fallujah in the Fallujah area, doing a little bit of everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Was that before or after you had started the academy?
So I had started the academy in 2005. I was in the reserves at the time and they activated our reserve unit. So I literally finished the training academy and I was in California that next week.
Wow.
So I didn't even field train. So 6 months of basic recruit life as a senior division police officer, deployed for a year, came back and FTO'd when I got back.
Wow.
And so it was a little bit of a learning curve because, you know, when you're new already, you don't really know what you don't know.
Yeah.
So you go from the academy to the streets.
Yeah.
Well, now I had a year removed from the streets. So jeez. I thank God that I had the two FTOs that I had that realized that and worked with me on it. They're actually still current Richmond police officers. So I'm very fortunate in that respect because I was like, I brain dumped quite a bit, to be honest, of what I learned in the academy because of the mission at hand that I was going to be doing for about the year. So like the paperwork stuff, totally forgot about. So they were very patient with me when I was doing my 8 weeks of field training when I came
home. Love it. I love it. Well, that's great. You're out of the academy then. You're on the street. You've got your field training. Take me a little bit through your process because you talked about some of the specialty stuff, right? I mean, you jump out squad, EOD maybe?
EOD.
Yeah, yeah. What? Take us through that a little bit because it's just fascinating to me to hear about some of these different assignments. And I think everybody, again, as we talk about what the Clan McTernan has given to the Richmond Police Department, I want them to hear a little bit.
So I started out in night shift patrol. I was pretty fortunate as far as like going to day shift. I can't remember exactly how long I was in night shift. Wound up going to day shift, great relief. At the time, my sergeant was J.D. Ross. From daytime patrol, I went to the focus mission team, which is essentially a jump out squad.
Right.
At the time, I think I had 4 or 5 years on the department. Because when you were putting in for those units, that wasn't something you were getting like a year on the streets. Like you had to kind of establish yourself.
Yep.
So when the time came, I put in for it. I was fortunate enough to get it. And I spent about 6 years in that unit.
Wow.
With some really good team members, most of which are all still here. Most of them are supervisors now. There's some sergeants.
Okay.
Tenants, right. So to give you a level of like what kind of, you know, professionalism came out of that unit.
Yeah.
Like people building their careers here, right?
Absolutely.
It was a lot of fun. It went by really fast because you're on the go from doing drug stuff, the prostitution stuff, following people around, looking for fugitives. It was great. Probably the best part was it was the first time I was all that facial hair. So I had a really big beard, really long hair. You know, so I looked really cool to myself. You know, my wife thought I looked like a dirtbag, but I thought I looked pretty cool. From there, I went to property crimes, investigating larcenies, burglaries, robberies, and then put in for the academy in 2019, and I've been there since. I'm currently the acting sergeant. I work with a great group of people over there at the training academy, all established in their fields from wherever they came from before they came to the academy.
Cause yeah.
If Lieutenant McCall hasn't told you, like, he's only putting the right people over there, right? And I don't have any say in who comes over, but
right.
My captain and lieutenant have put the right people in the right positions in that building.
It's funny you say that because both Captain Flippo and Lieutenant McQuail have said you're the right person for the post you're in. And Lieutenant McQuail had actually said to me, you know, Richard is acting sergeant. We don't normally do something like that, but that was more than appropriate for you. That's pretty cool.
No, I've enjoyed it. And it's not sergeant by title alone. It's
right.
It's the fact that how much they trusted me to
right.
do the job. So
right.
you're not just responsible for the recruits, you're responsible, you know, whether you call it paperwork or mental health for the officers that work at the academy and for them to put me in that position and keep me there for the time that I've been in it. I have a very strong command structure that believes in my ability and my team's ability to do our jobs.
535, Jeff Katz, News Radio WRVA. We are in the middle of a great conversation. Yes, it was pre-recorded about a week or so ago. It is me, obviously, and Acting Sergeant Richard McTernan from the Richmond Police Department Academy. And at this point in our conversation, all that Richard McTernan knows is that he is there to chat about the fact that he is now eligible for retirement. And everybody said, well, you know, if he leaves, it'll be the first time in darn near a half a century that there is not a McTernan serving RPD. And so we're just having a chat about this. And we record it. What he does not know is that in the other room, there is a serious operation underway bringing in all sorts of law enforcement officers from RPD and a few other agencies that are there to salute him. He has no idea that his lovely wife and their two children are being snuck into the building, and he has no idea that this legacy of which I speak, this Jan McTernan legacy, this Jan McTernan Legacy Award, is something we've already decided to present. And he's going to be the recipient of the first ever Jan McTernan Legacy Award. So pay close attention, because when he points out he's surprised, you can take it to the bank, he is surprised.
Well, that's, again, I keep using the word legacy. I don't know why, it's just on my brain today, but that's part of this legacy, right? I mean, from Lieutenant McTernan to Acting Sergeant McTernan, down to those recruits in your basic school, they're getting an awful lot of not just instruction from the books from DCJS, but folks who have dedicated their lives to this profession we love.
Right. And I'm fortunate, like I said, to be in a position at the academy and, you know, kind of, I wouldn't say I mold them or we mold them. We get the right people in to teach these recruits while they're on their 7-month adventure to become a risk police officer. So we've been fortunate in that respect. We're very selective about who we have them have contact with,
right?
Who's teaching what subject that they're learning that day. And it's been a pretty well old machine that we've had going over there for quite a while.
Wow. Tell me a little bit about the recruits, if you don't mind. You, obviously, everybody who's done the job at some point has been a recruit. We've all gone through the academy. We've all had folks that we thought, man, he looks like a nice guy until he's yelling at me or chasing me or telling me to do something. And those, maybe even the first couple of days, maybe the first couple of weeks, I at least for me, I didn't get it. I don't know why you're being so mean to me. I don't understand this. And by the time the end comes and somebody hands you that shield, and you look at those very same people who a few months ago you were sure were just making your life miserable, you now realize, man, they're helping me not just be a cop at some point, but to stay safe and keep everybody else safe. I mean, it's an amazing sort of transition for those recruits, don't you think?
Yeah, you get a mixed group of individuals that want to do this job.
Yeah.
So all backgrounds, you name it. So when they start, it is a lot of intense, you could call it yelling, PT,
yeah,
physical training. But there's a reason we want them doing it together, how they're being told to do it by us, when they're supposed to be doing it, right? So there's a timeline of the way we want them to do things. And there are people who haven't maybe been talked to like that before.
Right.
Somebody yelling at them.
Yeah.
Right? Wanting them to work quickly under stress, right? Stress inoculation is what we call it. So you're being given a task, we're being loud, and we're trying to essentially just mess up your thought pattern. Like, can you do this while you're just being yelled at, right?
Yep.
So some take longer to get what we're doing than others,
mm-hmm,
to buy into what our profession is. Because I say this a lot, you don't know what you don't know. And I tell that to the recruits all the time, because sometimes they want your approval. So they'll pull you aside and be like, how am I doing?
Yeah.
I'm saying, and I always get the same answer. You're right where you're supposed to be at.
There you go.
And I just walk away. So it kind of leaves them with nothing, but you know, there are no favorites.
That's right. Right.
Either you're getting it faster than the first person is, and somebody's always trying to play catch up, right? So we're trying to bring all this together. High performers, we want the low performers looking up to, right? So until they get pulled up to where those high performer recruits are.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the process. And by the end, when we have our simulated scenario training, you know, the essentially calls for service that they're going to see out there, you really start seeing them put that together. But I think the ultimate test is field training.
Yeah.
Because we can only simulate to some degree of the call volume, the fight in progress calls. But until you're legitimately putting hands on somebody, you have to take the jail that doesn't want to go.
Right.
You don't see that until field training.
That's right.
So we put them with the FTOs. They get 4 weeks with one, switch and go to the second FTO. And we've got some pretty powerful FTOs out there that won't hesitate to cut them if they're not making the grade.
Right.
They'll fail them. You know, we have, fortunately for them, some people have not made it through the process because they just couldn't put it all together.
Right.
And you have to be in real time, right? Because people get hurt, they get themselves hurt.
That's right.
Yeah, that's the process.
I love it. I love it. Richard McTernan is spending a couple of moments with us. Richard is a is the acting sergeant over at the Richmond Police Department Training Academy. 20 years of service now. We were talking about the legacy that is established with Richard's family as a result of his mom's service, Lieutenant Jan McTernan. A couple of years back, Rich, we had I got together with you and your brother Mike. We had done this Blue Friday thing for a couple of years. Your folks passed away. Your mom, again, when she passed away, I asked both of you guys if it would be okay to rename our Blue Friday honor in her memory. And I don't know if you remember distinctly, but I will never forget, because the three of us sort of started laughing. And we said, oh my God, she would hate that. She would be so flippin' angry, yes, right? She would have yelled. Yes. Yeah, and at some point she will. Right. At some point we're going to see her and she's going to say, how dare you?
Right.
Because her mindset was always, it's the mission, yeah. Right?
It's the job. She didn't need your awards. She didn't need your citations. It was the job.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, it seems like you're kind of cut from the same cloth, man.
You've met my brother Michael. We are a little bit different.
A little bit.
Yeah, I'm a little quiet and reserved. He's a little more like my father, a little say whatever comes to his head.
yeah.
Not much of a talker in general, so it's
yeah. Well,
a little different.
But you were probably well served for everything, training and then training others, because the great Santini was there kind of laying it down from day one.
Yes. I always joke with people who may not know that movie reference because of ages or whatnot, but the great Santini with Robert Duvall, Michael and I laughed. They're like, what was it like growing up with your dad? I'm like, watch the great Santini. That was my life. In a good way. I mean, that's the men we are, you know.
That's right.
Well, myself and my two brothers.
That's yeah. Right. That's right. Well, Richard, I appreciate you coming in just to talk a little bit about this. And again, the legacy, the reason that I asked Richard in here and called you Sonny as well, just so everybody knows. I mean, you people who maybe know you a little bit better, it's right. Sonny, but just this whole process that now 20 years in, and you are, right, you're qualified to retire. You could leave today if you wanted to.
Yes, sir.
And you're thinking now, what could be the transition?
Yes, just trying to figure out my kind of next move there. And it's not that I have any love lost for law enforcement. I just, when I came onto the job, I kind of had, when I signed up for the retirement, I had this idea in my head, like, I'm going to do it, and I'm going to just try to do something different. Because all I've really done since high school is military, police, and I was like, you know what, let's see if I can fit somewhere into the civilian sector and, and see what that lifestyle is kind of like. And, because I don't know when that'll happen.
Right.
It happened 3 months from now. It could happen next year. I just don't know when that time's going to come. We'll see what lines up. But I'm excited for the next chapter. I have a lot of close people that have retired from the department, and they're doing great things out in I keep saying civilian world. They're no longer in law enforcement. They're
right.
Different jobs, civilian jobs.
Yeah.
And, you know, I want that kind of peace of mind that they have. You know, they did their time. Let's see what the other side of the coin looks like now.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's plenty of capable law enforcement out there that can still protect me.
Right? That's right. That's right.
I live in Prince George County. I have all the faith and confidence in them. If I needed them, they're coming, right?
That's so right.
There's great jobs being done in law enforcement around this country.
There you right? go. So, there you go. Well, look, a large part of what's happening in Central Virginia is because of your service for the past 20 years, your mom's service before that. And I mentioned this whole, this legacy thing. And I did say that you are a lot like your mom in that if you knew about any sort of honors or presentations or acknowledgement of what you've done, you probably wouldn't be here right now, which is the reason that you are here right now. And I want to share with you that I have decided to establish when I started doing this math, Richard, when I started looking at the fact that between Jan McTernan and Richard McTernan, again, almost half a century of service and that legacy that your mom established, I want everybody in Central Virginia to be aware of that legacy. So your mom is going to have a second reason to be very, very angry with me. And she will be livid. I know it wasn't just Lieutenant Jan McTernan Blue Friday honor, but But what I decided to do was to establish something called the Jan McTernan Legacy Award.
That's awesome.
And it's going to be presented to somebody who has completed 20 years of service, is eligible to retire, or maybe has just retired, but has given back in that way. And when I started thinking about when we would present this, we're only going to present this probably once a year.
Okay.
You know, the Blue Friday honor, Lieutenant Jan McTernan Blue Friday honor is once a month, the final Friday of each and every month, because we got a lot of people out there doing that. But this is something different. And so this Jan McTernan Legacy Award, we're going to present once a year. I'm going to ask you, ask Michael, ask some of the other law enforcement leaders in Central Virginia to give me ideas and feedback, and we'll just kind of get together around a cup of coffee or something. Okay. And say, hey, here's the folks that are in contention. What do we think? Good idea, bad idea? And we'll go from there. You're willing to do that?
Absolutely, 100%. Thank you. That's quite the honor.
All right. Well, there's another part to this, and that is that given that we established the Jan McTernan Legacy Award, we had to have the first ever recipient of the Jan McTernan Legacy Award. And that, Sonny, is you.
That's pretty awesome. Thank you, Jeff.
You are the first recipient, and I cannot for the life of me think of anybody more deserving.
Seeing my mom's name and my name on the same thing, that's pretty, trying not to get emotional.
Yeah. Yeah. So I want you to take that. I will also tell you, Congressman John McGuire has, as we speak, just entered into the congressional record on the floor of the House of Representatives a story about this. So Jan McTernan, Richard McTernan, that award now part of the congressional record, and there will be an official, it's very fancy. You're going to have to find some place to hang it up. Do not put this just in a closet. I refuse to let that happen.
Yes,
all right.
Yes,
so even if I have to go above your head, I will talk to Ginger. I want the congressional record up on the wall, and I want that displayed, man.
Absolutely.
So congratulations to you as the first recipient of the Jan McTernan Legacy Award. And you'll notice we don't have her title on there, and that's for a reason. Because everything that you talked about, how Jan came home, and she was mom,
right,
and she was wife, mm-hmm, and she was all about family. And it's not just her contributions to law enforcement, it is who she was as a human being. And she was, I will say it again, I won't get emotional, I hope, but she was one of the finest people that I was blessed to know. I loved your mom with all my heart. I loved your dad with all my heart. They were just two of the best people to this day. Not that it compares to you or Michael, mm-hmm, but I miss them.
Yep.
I miss hanging out with them. But I am so proud of who it is that they've produced in this world with you and Michael and Kyle and Peyton. I mean, you know, these are great folks. So again, excuse me, Sonny, you are the first recipient of the Jan McTernan Legacy Award, and I congratulate you for that. I know you're thinking about other things, and anything that any of us can ever do, of course, you just reach out, but you have earned that in every respect.
Thank you very much. That really means a lot. It's kind of a loss for words.
Well, then we'll leave it there. That is Acting Sergeant Richard McTernan. He is at the Richmond Police Department Training Academy as we speak. He has completed now 20 years of service, weighing what is next, looking at some sort of other options, other avenues. And he is the first recipient of the Jan McTernan Legacy Award. The legacy that Jan McTernan established in Central Virginia is without parallel, in my opinion. Service as a United States Marine, service in the Richmond Police Department. And as I said, once a year or thereabouts, we're going to present the Jan McTernan Legacy Award to somebody who has gotten their 20 years in. Maybe is staying in law enforcement, maybe is retiring out of the profession. That's kind of what this is designed for, more than active service, if you will. But we will have more of these as we move forward. Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA.
Well, there you have it. Spend a couple of moments with Susanna Hoffs, if you don't mind. Pretty sure that whole legal matter has been resolved. Restraining orders, stay away. I mean, this stuff happens. What are you going to do? I was always such a huge Susanna Hoffs fan. I was a mark, as you might have said in my other vocation. Anyway, thanks again to everybody at the Richmond Police Department, in particular Lieutenant Steve McQuail and Captain Faith Flippo over at the Richmond Police Academy. There was a lot of coordination to pull off what you just heard. A huge amount of coordination. And moving forward, as we look at Central Virginia law enforcement folks with 20 years of service plus who are eligible to retire, they might very well be in line at some point to receive that Jan McTernan Legacy Award. I've already got a couple of ideas, and I've had a couple of folks reach out to me when they heard that this was going to be a thing, saying, how about, and all tremendous suggestions. But the way that we're going to make this work is that Richard and Michael and I will get together. We will get together as well with some of the leading law enforcement personnel in our area. We'll have a suggestion pile, right? We're going to have a lot of people that are suggested for this award, nominated for this award, and it's going to take a lot of examination and discussion. And then we'll figure out the right person. Not going to do it on a monthly basis at all. We're going to do it at the most once per year. So that's the 2025 honoree right there, period. We'll see how it plays out as we move forward. But congratulations again to Richard McTernan, who is most deserving for that award. Hey, tomorrow morning, 6 a.m., please make sure you're listening to Richmond's Morning News with Rich Herrera. And God willing, you and I get the chance to do this all over again tomorrow starting at 3. Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA.